You're listening to a podcast from thebodypro.com. The following podcast was recorded at the 14th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections, also known as CROI 2007. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, please visit us online at thebodypro.com.
Trudy Larson, I'm a pediatric infectious disease specialist and professor of pediatrics at the University of Nevada School of Medicine in Reno.
Oh, okay. So tell me, what did you think was the most significant research presented at CROI 2007?
I think one of the biggest stories was about breastfeeding and really defining the risk of breastfeeding in the third world, where we're really seeing most of our cases of pregnancy and perinatal transmission, and demonstrating that the answer is not simple, but much more complicated. However, the data this time shows that breastfeeding should be continued, and that is not what was anticipated in terms of prevention messages. We know viruses in breast milk, and there were a number of posters and presentations that actually talked about what is in breast milk and correlated high viral loads in breast milk to transmission. We knew that. Also, that sicker women are more likely to transmit. We knew that. The issue was, if these women continued to breastfeed, what would be the risk, mortality being the outcome? And actually, if they stopped breastfeeding in these countries where they have an inadequate water source and are unable to completely guarantee safe formula, the risk of mortality was significantly higher in stopping breastfeeding. The babies died of diarrheal diseases. They got more bacterial infections. So the death rates were substantially higher in the group of infants who stopped breastfeeding.
Uh-huh. Why did it take all these years? We're 25 years into the epidemic. Why did it take so long to find this out?
I think they really started doing the careful studies where they could actually do the lab support. Because these are projects that we would think would be easy in the U.S., but they needed to make sure that they could actually diagnose HIV in the mothers and in the babies, that they could guarantee follow-up. Most of these are part of the broader prevention studies that actually use antiretrovirals. And so all these studies, the mothers had antiretroviral therapy, either short course for prevention or long course because they needed it for their own health. And in spite of that, we were still seeing excess transmissions from breastfeeding, and they just needed to say, okay, if we just stopped it, now that we have these networks in place to support it and to study it, what really is happening? And they were able to, you know, now it's convincing that you don't stop breastfeeding because the mortality rates are so much higher in those babies.
Uh-huh. And is this just rural areas in the developing world, or is it, I mean, how do you decide if you're a mother in Johannesburg,
right,
South Africa? Does that mean you follow these guidelines, or you follow?
Okay, there's another couple of things too that I think that were very important. Number one is that exclusive breastfeeding actually is critical. That if you mix feed, some breastfeeding, some formula feeding, water, foods, that those babies had an increased risk of transmission. So, I mean, we're starting to get much clearer information now. And that probably,
do we know why?
That probably has to do with a couple of factors, that foreign proteins in a baby's gut sometimes are irritating, and if you interrupt mucosal barriers in the gut, you have a higher risk of transmission through the gut. So that's maybe one of the risks of if you do both the formula foods and breastfeeding, that the transmission's higher. So it's either exclusive breastfeeding or exclusive formula feeding that you can actually have success with, which means reliable water sources. So maybe in a more AFI and the formula supply can be guaranteed, you can give a different recommendation like we do in our country, in Europe. But for folks who don't have those, and I think the majority of women in Africa do not have access.
Is this about Asia also? Is this in
Asia.
So it's all developing world?
I would say developing world everywhere, where breastfeeding actually is essential in children actually growing up because of the risk of diarrheal diseases and death from diarrheal diseases. So this just carried it out one step further and said, even with HIV, the babies do better. Said, even with HIV, the babies do better to breastfeed exclusively. And they had some more recommendations. Safety issues for transmission in women whose CD4 cells were greater than 350 had a much lower risk of transmission. And so they could really be counseled to continue their breastfeeding up into 2 years, which is more what they would do. And again, the outcomes there are better because of the nutrition issues.
So as long as their CD4 counts stayed at a certain level?
Yeah, over 350 seemed to be a really good cutoff. To continue. Now, there's some studies that are ongoing that will provide us more important data. If we treat the mothers during their breastfeeding, will that reduce transmission? So do you get benefits both ways? And they show that antiretrovirals, 3TC and ibuprofen, do get into breast milk. Not reliably, but do in a number of cases. And so this may be another way that they can treat women and treat babies. So I think that was exciting information. The other one that's an add-on is the issue of nevirapine resistance with a single dose of nevirapine. And there were a lot of concerns about, since that is the standard for prevention programs, not only in developing countries in Africa, but in Eastern Europe, where they still have difficulty with resources. And so you use nevirapine single dose. And what about resistance in the mothers? Very high rates shortly after delivery. The studies now have gone out far enough to show that these resistances decay over time. And in one very, very nice study showed actually that it did not impact the failure when that woman needed to be started on her own ART. And in that particular study, actually, it was 3TC resistance that predicted failure. So these are reassuring, and it sort of says, okay, short dose, single dose, nevirapine is important in that first transmission phase, and it does not appear to be hugely detrimental. Other studies this time showed that shorter courses of AZT3TC could also benefit reducing the amount of resistant nevirapine resistance as well. So more strategies.
But could you explain what you mean by decay? Because I thought that
right.
These resistance mutations are archived and that they
yes.
come up again.
They are. Well, I think that's another real interesting. I'm not sure how this is going to fit in because I think this is the first time we've had some papers that described the issue of minor variants. You know, the minor resistant variants and their impact on later treatment. I still think we need further data with that to say how big an impact do they have. But clearly, if you look at traditional measures of measuring resistance, it goes away. And if you have from 12 to 24 months out from the time of a single dose of nevirapine, reinstituting a therapy with nevirapine or efavirenz seem to be successful in most of the cases. And that's very important and good news for developing countries.
Uh-huh. So that was the big take home for you?
For me, it's two things. One, the nevirapine does look good, at least in that subset of women who have CD4 cells less than 200. One other study suggested that it may be safe in the 200 to 350 range. It's not a huge study, about 500 women, but it suggested that it didn't have the severe liver disease that they saw in other studies. That needs to be reconfirmed because that will give us even more leeway to use nevirapine in that patient population for the hepatotoxicity. But that made me feel better about, you know, being able to use a nevirapine or a efavirenz-based regimen later on. And then the breastfeeding, it clarified many, many issues, I think, for a lot of us who do work in some of the resource-limited settings so that we can provide some science to the recommendations.
So all these studies that you mentioned have no significance really for developed world, for United States and for Europe?
You know, we do use some single-dose nevirapine for prevention, but it's generally in emergency situations where we have women coming in who haven't been on prophylaxis, and this is sort of a way to do that. So we do have some women who are getting single-dose nevirapine. So there is, I think, there's some information for us here. The breastfeeding issue, I think, reaffirms what we tell our mothers here. You have an alternate source. Even in a cultural setting, we'd like to give you tools so that you can say to your mother, your grandmother, you can't breastfeed, and we will give you some tools on how to say that. So I think it's very, very clear that is something that we now scientifically can back up. So there's some relevance. There's a lot more studies about what drugs are being used in pregnancy and their safety. And our armamentarium in the United States is expanding because we can safely use a lot more of the protease inhibitors now. And we needed that because of the growing problem with resistance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from thebodypro.com. For more podcasts and full coverage of major HIV medical conferences, please visit us online at thebodypro.com.